All, you know that it's way more fun to be here with us in this esteemed panel than it is having cocktails with your friends at this time. So we appreciate your interest and enthusiasm around readmissions and access to care. So today I'm going to talk about pathways to potentially preventable hospitalizations for diabetes and heart failure, specifically focusing on patient perspectives from our qualitative study aim of a larger study that we've been working on. I want to acknowledge my fabulous colleagues that are listed here, and this research was supported by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. We have no conflicts to disclose. So there's a large and growing literature around potentially preventable readmissions, which are defined as hospitalizations that are, in theory, avoidable with access to timely and effective health care, such as hospitalizations for uncontrolled diabetes or hypertension. Cardiovascular disease and diabetes are particularly common types of these types of preventable readmissions and preventable hospitalizations generally. Of course, unnecessary hospitalizations strain healthcare resources with unnecessary and costly utilization. They also burden individuals and families with unnecessary suffering, and because of all these reasons, they've been the focus of considerable policy action because of their promise to simultaneously reduce costs and improve quality, and there's been a particular focus on preventable readmissions lately. While this is a large and growing literature, the majority of these studies have lacked patient perspectives and the patient stories of this because a lot of this data has done with administrative data and using administrative databases. And we believe that patients can provide key insights into the reasons for their hospitalization as well as potentially ideas for solutions for those. So this project is part of a larger mixed method study. We had a quantitative study aim, and then we'll have a pilot flowing from this, those two pieces, trying to reduce preventable hospitalizations generally in the communities of relevance for us in Hawaii. But this piece really focuses on the patient's stories about their reasons why they believe they were hospitalized for a preventable condition. So the study site is called Queens Medical Center. It's the largest hospital in Hawaii. And we talked to adults hospitalized with a potentially preventable hospitalization, either for diabetes or for heart disease. We had a semi-structured interview where we asked about demographics. This included validated measures around things such as health literacy, medication adherence. And then the focus of what I'm talking about today are the open-ended questions, where we asked, you know, what do you think happened with your health that got you sicker and had you come to the hospital? Like, what happened to you before you were in the hospital? What was going on? Two independent coders listened to the recordings of this, also looked at the notes, and worked iteratively to come up with a coding scheme using the framework approach. In the end, the consensus coding document that we both agreed upon is what is providing the evidence here today. So our sample was 90 individuals. Of note, about 65% had been previously hospitalized for the same problem. So while our focus here is on preventable hospitalizations, you can see there's a lot of preventable, you know, in theory, readmissions going on here. And Hawaii has high rates of health insurance, so accordingly, about 90% of this population did indeed have health insurance. So the theory behind potentially preventable hospitalizations is often framed as an access to primary care issue, and we just want to emphasize that, you know, one of the major measures of access to care here was actually quite high in this population. And then you can see the diverse sample that we had. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the themes and then specifically how those flow into pathways to identify reasons why people might have preventable readmissions, and then talk about the relevance for interventions. So we have our preventable hospitalizations. And so when patients were telling the story, there was often, of course, an acute reason that made them come to the hospital. So this would be a, you know, heart failure symptom like, well, you know, I was having incredible swelling, or diabetes-related symptoms of, you know, either an infection or a fainting, or other, you know, incredible pain or other kinds of symptoms. And these acute factors are often what gets focused on in the hospital, you know, trying to resolve those sorts of things. So it's easy to blame these immediate causes, right, and figure out how to solve them, like shortness of breath or infections. And we have spent a lot of time and money focusing clinical and technological solutions to resolve these issues. But when patients told their story, they had these sort of precipitating reasons why they were having these acute symptoms. So these included medication issues, self-management issues like difficulty following their diet and exercise plans, issues in communicating with providers or getting to their providers, or some readmission-specific types of things, So here's some examples. You can see the percentages of people reporting different precipitating factors, and these could overlap, so you could have a variety of precipitating factors. So the final one I was talking about, the readmission specific, are things like the patient felt they were discharged too early, or discharged with instructions not to walk, but you know they're in charge of their household, they're the mom with three kids, like what are they supposed to do? How can they not walk for 2 weeks? So these precipitating factors are really important to identify, and these represent more systems issues, you know, that we do think about when we try to think about the bigger picture of why people are hospitalized. So, you know, a patient, for instance, who was hospitalized because they didn't follow their chronic care management plan and drank too much water because they were really hot. And unfortunately, these precipitating factors, while important to identify, could easily fall into the blame the victim mentality. You knew you weren't supposed to drink the water. I know you were hot, but like, what are you doing here? You are in the hospital. And we assume that the patient should know better, and that maybe more and better patient education could solve that problem. And while I think that this is true in some cases, in the patient's stories, there is even a deeper factor often in the background. And we think it's critical to understand these, even further underlying factors. So the underlying factors included, in particular, social factors. So about 54% of people reported having a social factor in the background. These are things like extreme poverty, unstable housing or lack of housing, lack of social support, instability in their lives. So for instance, somebody said, the problem is, I know what I'm supposed to be doing, but I don't have a kitchen. So I'm just running off a toaster oven, a microwave, and a little broiler. Like, how am I supposed to cook these healthy meals that I'm now supposed to be cooking? Or somebody else saying, it's fine to have these healthy ideas about what I'm supposed to be eating, but I live in a transition home and I can barely eat where I'm staying at because all the food they give us, I can't eat a lot of salt and most of the food is salt. So other underlying factors we saw in these pathways were issues with knowledge, practical problems such as, challenges in transportation or remembering running into trouble remembering to take their meds. Another factor we found was sort of avoidance denial and people saying, it just was only until I got to the hospital that I really realized how significant and problematic this issue really was. We did find some healthcare systems type issues, and these are things such as access to insurance. Remember there was about 10% that actually didn't have insurance. So people saying, I would have gone to the doctor or bought my meds, but I didn't have any money because I don't have insurance. Or it was too expensive, right? And then behavioral health factors. So you can see here some examples of all of these. And the percentages of people reporting them. You can see over on the left-hand side where you see the numbers, they may be too far away, but social factors about 54%, knowledge about 42%. Practical problems were really uncommon, right? Only 6% of people reported some kind of, I was too busy, I just forgot, health is secondary, kind of like things you could easily be like, well, maybe more patient education will really move that up in people's esteem about how important that is. Avoidance denial, though, came up quite a bit, about 30%. People said, I didn't want to deal with this problem. I've always been healthy. Like, why am I sick now? I don't really want to, that's stressful to be this whole new person, and I don't like it. And then healthcare systems, again, no health insurance, no trust with the doctor. So people would have, I quit my meds and I didn't tell my doctor because I didn't, have a relationship with them that would allow me to discuss my, need for more holistic approaches for healthcare. And then behavioral health problems came up quite a bit. So comorbid depression or active drug use and alcohol sort of interfering with people's chronic care management plans. So for instance, and then these intersect with each other, right? They're not mutually exclusive. So here's somebody sort of talking about behavioral factors and how that intersects with these extreme social factors. So he says, I lost my wife and I couldn't focus at work, so I lost my job, I lost my house, and I did drugs because I didn't want to live anymore, and then I just stopped taking my meds. And so, here he is hospitalized with this preventable condition, but you see, the patient education is not probably going to solve this problem. He's got other factors in the background that really need support as well. So we think these underlying factors are critical to understanding why patients had the acute problems necessitating their hospitalization. And remember, these are their own stories about why they feel that they were hospitalized. And from these, we created the model that you just saw of the individual's pathways that we think you can use to, look through how the acute, precipitating, and underlying factors intersect, and maybe that can help identify potential intervention foci. For instance, here's a 52-year-old Native Hawaiian male, and he told who has heart failure. And his story was, he had been hospitalized, he left the hospital, and then he'd been readmitted when we talked to him. And he said, I look at my medications, they say take with food, I don't take on an empty stomach, but I don't have any money, I never have any food. So he's trying to, you know, follow his plan, but he has, you know, significant social challenges in the background. So for him, you can see the sort of precipitating factors are the medication issues and lifestyle self-care issues that are exacerbating his congestive heart failure issues and leading to his potentially preventable hospitalization. So for him, you know, really an important intervention is going to be social support, like housing, food, or social services, like housing, food, maybe social support to help support him. Because in the background of his story, also, he describes some limitations in his social support network as well. In contrast, here's another woman who really had a knowledge-based type of problem. She didn't really understand her condition. So she's 62 years old. She's hospitalized with diabetes, a pretty intense infection in her toe. And she said, you know, what was I thinking about my toe as it got worse and worse? You know, nothing. I was just surprised my toe looked like that. My diabetes had never showed out and never shown that I had a problem. And so for her, you know, the lifestyle self-care issues are important, as well as, you know, maybe some patient education and better communication with her provider or ability to go, you know, as needed or to know when it's an acute problem, which came up a lot, right? People sort of not knowing when it was acute enough to go to the doctor and saying, oh, I'll just wait for my appointment next week. And then all of a sudden the infection is so bad that they have to be hospitalized. So for her, you know, some more intense patient education may be helpful, or patient education in a way that she can understand, right? Focus on her specific needs, what's acute for her, what she should look for, and relevant in that way. So here's somebody who had, you know, was struggling with the more traditional, you know, health insurance issues. So he said, you know, I would have gone in if I had health insurance. So he's, you know, struggling with money and poverty as well, but then there's really this barrier of insurance. So that's solvable in a very different kind of policy-oriented way. And then finally, here's one of the few people that reported kind of a practical problem. And he said, you know, I don't know what happened that day. I was just really busy at a party on my wife's side. I didn't eat enough. I felt faint. You know, here I am in the hospital. And he was somebody for whom intervention seemed relatively clear, right? He was unlikely to come back again. He had no underlying behavioral health issues. He had no underlying social factors. He just kind of messed up, right? And so for him, maybe very, you know, targeted patient education at the point of hospitalization may be really useful. But that's very different from some of the patterns we've seen in the other individuals. So current federal policies include penalties for hospitals with preventable readmissions, and we think important factors predicting these hospitalizations are quite outside the traditional purview of the hospital or even really clinical medicine and how we think of. So we think, you know, we want to advocate that innovative partnerships policies would be very helpful to be developed to address the larger social issues around these hospitalizations. So our study, of course, has some limitations, one hospital in one unique state. And we also didn't interview people who had limited English proficiency or who were unable to give informed consent. And we think those individual stories by their caregiver or themselves would be very different about the reasons why they were hospitalized for preventable conditions. So we think that's an important area for further study. So our next steps are thinking about, you know, what are effective interventions given these issues, and we've been doing stakeholder feedback meetings where we go and present our findings to community stakeholders to hear their thoughts around, you know, where they think the most important, you know, of that sort of chart here, you know, of this chart, like which of that, you know, would we, if they want us to intervene on, and social factors, knowledge, you know, practical problems, where do they think that the real challenges lie in their community from their perspective, to really think about, to do the next step of the project, you know, considering community feedback as well as the individual patient perspectives. So here is our team. I just want to thank them all again. And again, thank you for your time and listening ears. Thanks. Any questions? Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I do think that there's a lot of talk around that and not a lot of how.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, we are less the how and more the, you know, we know what the community says also, and but, you know, I think APHA actually has a lot of great examples. Unfortunately, there's like 3,000 talks at any one time, but it's like, you know, there's really innovative, individualized programs in a lot of different places trying to link these pieces together. So, you know, I wish we could go see all those talks, but I do think there's cool programs and, you know, sort of demonstration projects. But what I'll say from the community is, you know, we took this thinking, well, we'll see what the community says for them as the most important important. And we didn't know. We thought behavioral health, for instance, might come up as one of the things that, even though I think I have the percentages here, it was common but not as common as, you know, social factors. But we wondered if knowledge, for instance, would come up, or, you know, people said. And they by far said social factors were what they wanted to see focused on, which really, you know, puts the onus on us to, like, figure out which of those innovative programs will work well for us, to try to work across sectors, to try to link with our housing. I mean, housing in Hawaii is a particular issue right now. Housing is really expensive, and, you know, we're having a lot of policy-related drama around housing, which is making these things worse, right? People are being swept from their homes. You know, they're living in these tents, and they're moving them from their homes without the ability to get their medication, for instance, out of there. So I just was hearing that they feel there's been a spike in ER visits and, you know, hospitalizations, you know, specifically by a population for whom was a target of this sweep. So anyway, I think it just points to figuring those out and making those systematized and testing them. And that there are, again, these, I think, people doing a lot of innovative projects in this area that are in grants. You know, they aren't, everybody's out there. And so as that gets disseminated, to try to replicate those across different environments too will be really important. And as, you know, with CMS having the policy focus on this area, it is one of interest, right? So you may be able to get buy-in from the hospital in a way that, you know, 5 years ago, maybe they would never have been interested in this. Yeah.
Just a quick comment. I work in California in the East Bay. There's a lot of partnerships between primary care and hospital systems now for care coordination stuff. One of the missing pieces is really like the IT piece, a lack of interconnected EHR.
Right.
So in primary care, you have some access to hospital records, but hospitals don't have access to primary care records necessarily.
Right. And I mean, from the world of quantitative research in this area, what we really, I mean, I know there's some movement also to get better social factors and behavioral health factors in hospital admission data and EMRs that then could be in the clinical setting, in theory, could go out to both research and to other kind of clinical practice, so that the hospital has some sense of homelessness and social support and other things. And then it connects, right, that it all connects together. And, you know, we spend a lot of money on IT, but, you know, we've created a lot of silos. Thank you.